I'm not pulling out of the driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for the Drive to Work, coronavirus edition. So I've been using my time at home to interview people from the present and past. Today, from the past. So I have Henry Stern to go way back to talk about Portal Three Kingdoms. Hey, Henry.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Okay, so let's go back to the very beginning, which is, what in the world, what is Portal Three Kingdoms? What is this?
So Portal Three Kingdoms is an odd duck for Magic sets. This has happened, oh gosh, was it 97, 98? I forget when Bill Rose...
The set came out in 99. May 99 is when the set came out.
Okay, so I was working on it in 98 then, when the work was happening. Oh yeah, so... how much context do we need for even what Portal is for folks?
Well, explain a little bit what Portal is, then we'll jump into Portal Three Kingdoms.
Okay, so Portal was basically a beginner's version of Magic that we had put out in like 97 or so, I think, somewhere around there was when Portal first came out. And it was, the thought behind it was a good thought that like, hey, you know, Magic is pretty hard to understand, especially for new players. Can we make like a easier to understand version of Magic that captures the essence of Magic, but doesn't have all the complexities of rules? So in Portal, there's sorceries, but no instants, no enchantments, no artifacts. You have land, just basic land. You have creatures, and you have sorceries, and that's all you get.
Right, that's it.
Even with those restrictions, it's still a pretty fun game, and you can have pretty interesting interactions. Not nearly as complex and interesting as regular Magic gets, but you can still have like, you know, the colors are still kind of like what you'd expect colors to be. You know, black is evil and has, you know, gets rid of creatures directly, and red does direct damage, and green has the biggest creatures, and blue's a little trickier to sort of get the trickiness of blue across when you don't have instants and stuff. But still, you know, you have flying creatures and such. So that's what Portal was. And it had some success when we first launched it. And we wanted to make a version of Portal that we could introduce for like China and Japan and Korea, basically all of Asia. But the thought was, instead of using the Portal, you know, high fantasy that Magic is, could we do it with the theming that would maybe make it more... not palatable, more interesting or more of interest to people from the Asia region. And the thought was, can we use the Three Kingdoms story and theme a Portal set with a Three Kingdoms story and make Portal be Portal Three Kingdoms for Asia?
So since probably a lot of people listening might not be super familiar with Three Kingdoms, what is, in real brief, what is the Three Kingdoms story? What is that?
Yeah, so that's a shame, because they should know. Three Kingdoms is actually super important culturally and historically to almost everyone in Asia, but especially China. It's, think of it as like the King Arthur stories or the Arthurian legends and how important that is to sort of Western culture and Western fantasy. That's basically the equivalent for China, except there's like, it's a little bit more historically accurate than the Arthurian legends were. I'm not saying the Arthurian legends are completely, there probably was someone named King Arthur, but you know, who knows? But it's definitely more historically true. There was this sort of warring kingdoms period in China, which is around from like 100 to 200 AD or so is when this period of history took place in China. But the Three Kingdoms sort of, romance of the Three Kingdoms story is like one third, you know, history and one third fantasy, and maybe sort of, I don't know what the other third is, but it's basically a mixture of like history and fantasy mixed together. So there's like crazy things going on, you know, people flying, people doing magic, people doing stuff. But it also has like, there's like real history there too. And the cultural impact of the stories and the characters and what they did and where they did and why they did it, it's still very relevant today. It's like when I traveled in China, not for this set, but for other trips, it's like you hear people say, like when you're on the river, it's like, oh, hey, this is where the Battle of Red Cliffs took place. And this is where this thing happened in Three Kingdoms. And it's still sort of very relevant to people's lives. And for gamers, it's hugely influential for games. Like, I'm sure people are serious gamers, especially if they like games from Asia, that they've heard of Three Kingdoms and they know what Three Kingdoms is, because there's been a ton of both strategy and fighting games from Three Kingdoms.
Okay, so something I want to explain the audience might be unaware of is, so back in 1998, Magic R&D wasn't that big. I mean, right now, like, what we call Studio X, which is a little more than just R&D, but, like, you know, it's like 200 people. It's a giant number of people. But, like, back in the day, I think there was, like, five of us that worked on Magic full-time, and then a handful that, like, occasionally worked on Magic.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, yeah, there was, like, five people who were in it up to our noses, and then maybe another five people who kind of dipped their toes and their feet in from time to time, but yeah.
And so this project was pretty much like a solo project. You were the person who did this.
Yes, it was just me. There was an art director, but he wasn't like doing the set with me. He was like, I'd give this creature. He was then responsible for finding an artist. And in this set, we like had all of our artists came from Asia and China and Japan and Korea to do the art for the set.
His name was Lee T.
Yeah, Li Tian? It might have been T. I thought it was Tian, but it might be T. So this was a solo project, but it was also unusual for Magic. Now, it's not like we asked one person to solo design a full large set, you know, with all these brand new mechanics. So it was an easier task than like it would be to design even a small set, like to design a full set, you know, by yourself. There was a lot of creative there. It was basically the ultimate in top-down design exercise. Instead of doing a top-down card, it was like do a whole top-down set, you know, where like every card and every creature and everything has to sort of fit into this story somehow, which was an interesting exercise.
Yeah,
now,
what?
So go ahead.
No, I'm saying one of the things about the Portal things is while a lot of the cards were new in Portal, like whenever we could, sometimes they reskinned them, but we would use cards that were existing in Magic.
Yeah, a lot of them were based on existing cards from Magic, for sure.
Okay, so I want to start with one of the most things that comes up a lot when people talk about Portal 3 Kingdoms. So there, in fact, I think was one keyword in Portal 3 Kingdoms. And it wasn't a brand new keyword, although it was mimicking something, obviously. So let's talk about how horsemanship came to Portal 3 Kingdoms.
It came to exist? Sure. So when we're doing this top-down exercise, it's going to take a little bit more context for all of it. The three kingdoms, there were, in fact, three different kingdoms that were competing to sort of take over China. There was the Wu, the Wei, and the Shu kingdoms. So like the first exercise was like kind of figuring out, you know, A, what colors would those kingdoms be and how they work. But then, you know, like a lot of the key, one of the key, not the key, but one of the key things in Portal was the evasion. And the only evasion really available was either flying or land walking, I think were the two things that we let creatures have in Portal. And while flying is great, you know, thematically, and there were a few creatures that flew in Portal 3 Kingdoms, it's hard to have like, We knew that we were going to have a ton of the cards were going to be legends and were going to be the various generals and leaders and soldiers and fighters of Three Kingdoms. And it just didn't make sense to have these people up in the air flying like that. That makes no sense. So we needed a mechanic that would like essentially mimic flying, but be in a way that thematically works for people to do. And that's how we came about horsemanship, because lots of these guys were always seen on horseback riding around. And, you know, as you know, it's tough for someone who's not on horseback to block somebody that's on a horse, you know, cavalry tends to overrun infantry pretty well. And so that's how we settled on horsemanship, is basically the equivalent of flying for the set.
Yeah, so by the way, I misspoke earlier. There is land walk in the set in addition to horsemanship. I don't see flying. Like I said, doesn't have flying, so I don't think there is flying in the set.
No, there's no flying in Portal 3 Kingdoms because we used horsemanship in place of flying. So horsemanship, creatures with horsemanship can't be blocked or can only be blocked by other creatures with horsemanship is how horsemanship works. Great. You know, that works, and it works thematically great for the set, and it works within the Three Kingdoms world. Now, it makes horsemanship very, very good when you use a horsemanship character in a normal Magic set or playing with normal Magic cards, because there aren't many cards that have horsemanship. In fact, I'm pretty sure they all only exist in Portal Three Kingdoms.
Yeah, so just a little context for the audience. Portal, when we originally made Portal, wasn't playable in sort of normal Magic formats. Like, it was kind of its own thing. So, like, you couldn't just bring your Portal cards and go to Standard or, I mean, the formats had different names, I think, back then. But you couldn't just use your Portal cards at your local store playing in a tournament. And so I think when you made Horsemanship, it's like, well, it only's going to like you're only going to play it with itself. And then years later, we decided, why not let people play Portal cards? And we sort of made them legal. And then all of a sudden, Horsemanship's now interacting with other formats and stuff that it never did before.
Yeah, it also made certain cards in Three Kingdoms very, very valuable because they have effects that like restricted cards had back in normal Magic. Like Imperial Seal, you know, it's like, not Demonic Tutor, Vampiric Tutor.
Right? Imperial Seal. Imperial Seal is the one you're thinking?
Imperial Seal, yeah. It's like what Vampiric Tutor was. That's, you know, quite a good card, you know, good enough to be restricted. And so, like, it shot up in value. And I hear in, like, some wacky formats, like some of the other Portal cards have been used that people play just for the Horsemanship effect. It essentially, like, there was either a spell or a creature, I forget which one, that, like, gives all your other creatures Horsemanship for the turn. And that's essentially making all your creatures unblockable.
It's a blue card, right?
Yeah. What was it? Someone told me about it recently. I'm looking at the blue cards here. Yeah, Sun Quan.
Okay, Sun Quan. Oh, yeah, Sun Quan, Lord of Wu.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, it's 6 mana for 4/4, which is not great. But he makes all of your creatures unblockable, and he's unblockable as well. Still seems, to me, a little expensive for that effect. Like, how much did you pay for all your creatures unblockable? But sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. The one of the quirky things about Portal Three Kingdoms is when we released Portal Three Kingdoms, I believe it mostly only went to the Asian markets, and there was some English that went to Australia, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's not most of Portal Three Kingdoms is not in English, just a tiny, tiny portion, and even that I think was only sold in Australia. So it's not right. Not easy to get your hands on Portal, let alone English Portal Three Kingdoms, but it's not easy to get your hands on it. Okay, so I want to get back into talking a little bit about designing, making the set. Like you said, everything you were making, there are a lot of parameters because, right, you had basic land and sorceries and creatures. And you had to make everything sort of work within those constraints. So I want to talk a little bit about doing top-down design in a very constrained, like, you did not have every act, like, I've done a lot of top-down designs, but I had artifacts and enchantments and all sorts of things at my disposal.
Sure. From a pure design point of view, it was a super fun and interesting exercise. And I think the top-down stuff tends to work the best, too. At least when it works, it feels the best as you're playing it and as you see it, and it turns out the best and most approachable product. But this was a big top-down design because it's like I have to figure out, you know, where are these three kingdoms going to be? Okay, I have this cast of hundreds of characters. Okay, which characters are you going to use? I mean, you know which kingdoms those characters belong to, but like of those characters, how many of them are we going to use? And then like, how are we going to get the basics, kind of mesh that in with the basics of Magic? Like which ones are going to fly or have horsemanship in this case, which ones won't, how are creatures going to work? You know, are there going to be animals? Are there not going to be animals? How does direct damage work in this context, et cetera?
Well, let's talk big picture first, because you structured the set. So let's talk a little bit about how you structured the set. So how did you how did you break up the set? How did you?
Yeah. So the main thing was like, hey, what is going to be, you know, Wu? Which is going to be Wei? And which is going to be Shu? Like, what are the three kingdoms going to be? And it wound up, it kind of made sense. Like the heroes of the story of sorts are from Shu. And so it kind of made sense for them, or the most noble characters, maybe it's a better way of saying the heroes. So it made sense for that to be for the color white. The bad guys, and I hesitate to use that term because they're the ones that wind up winning in this story, are Wei, which is black. And the trickiest kingdom, maybe even that sort of a stretch, was Wu. But the main reason I wound up picking those three colors, and it should be obvious, is like
Wu is blue
because of horsemanship.
You made Wu blue.
Yes, Wu is blue. Yes, Wu is blue. Wei is black, and Shu is white. And that kind of makes sense, mostly kind of from a horsemanship point of view. Like those are the three colors that have flying, so it makes sense, or have the most flying, really. So it makes sense that those are the colors that are the colors of the three kingdoms. But once there, it's like, okay, well, what is red going to be? You know, like red can't just be can't be nothing. And what is green going to be? And it wound up being that, like, Red was sort of like more of the independent kingdoms, because there's a lot of people and a lot of characters that don't necessarily fit directly into one of those three kingdoms. And then green wound up being more kind of like the natural world. So like the actual creatures, like war elephants or a tiger or things like that, that actually exist in the story or exist in the real world, wound up in green.
Okay, so, and now, were there legendary creatures in this? I don't think they were actually, they were legends.
All the creatures, not all the creatures, all of the named characters are legends. And that was done more from just like more for flavor than for mechanical reasons necessarily. Like, it didn't make sense that like I could have two copies of the same leader and play it at the time in the same way you couldn't have legends and play at the same time back then. But it's mostly just for flavor reasons. There are many creatures that are not legends. So there's many like foot soldiers and stuff, or sort of nondescript people that are not legends. But all of the named people are legends.
So the other interesting thing is War of the Spark is what we called an event set, where we were sort of telling a story. But that you really were, like, there were events. Like, one of the interesting things about this is, like, the story has, like, things happen. Like, a lot of your cards are people, but some of them are, hey, it's this event. I'm representing this part of the story as a card.
Oh yeah, for sure. Sure. Yeah, a ton of it. Like, as much as possible, we tried to squeeze in things that, like, made sense from the story to being on a card. Like, a good example is our version of Giant Growth in Portal. So the Portal Giant Growth, I forget what they called it in Portal, but it's 1G, and it's any one creature gains +4/+4 till end of turn. Sorcery, not an instant. For Three Kingdoms, like, Giant Growth doesn't make sense as a card. But what made sense for us is there's like there was a famous blade that Guan Yu wielded.
Oh, wielding the Green Dragon is the name of the card.
Yeah. That's the name of the card in Portal of the Kingdoms. Yeah. Right. So the Green Dragon sword is this sort of famous sword that he had. And so for us, the version of quote unquote Giant Growth became, you know, wielding the Green Dragon. So it meant meaning that, like, oh, I'm like giving the Green Dragon sword to whatever creature it's going on, and it's getting +4/+4 till end of turn. Now, in modern Magic, you know, obviously that would be an artifact, right? The Green Dragon sword would just be an artifact that you could, you know, put on creatures, or I suppose an enchantment in the time before artifacts, but we couldn't even do enchantments back in the day.
Yeah, no,
but yeah. So there's that. But like, as much as we can, like almost every single card and sorcery that you see has some reference to it back in the story. And a lot of that wound up on the flavor text, but some of it wound up on the just from the artwork as well.
So just curious, because you mentioned flavor text, I'm sort of curious. Did you have anything to do with the flavor text? Did you work on the flavor text?
All of it.
All of it. Oh, you did all okay.
All of it. Yeah. and you know, as much as possible, like, some of it we're telling the story. But as much as I could, I wanted to use actual like quotes from the actual book, because I think it just feels better when you sort of see the actual quotes there. And a really famous one, there was a very famous poem in Three Kingdoms, and we sort of split up that giant poem and put them on all the Zodiac cards. There's like 12 Zodiac cards.
Let's talk about the Zodiac cards. There's not a lot of cycles in the set, but this is one of the few sort of cycles in the set. So there are 12 Zodiac cards, right?
Yeah, I think three red, three green.
No, three red, three black, and six green.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, black has Zodiac Pig, Zodiac Rat, and Zodiac Snake. Red has Zodiac Dog, Zodiac Dragon, Zodiac Goat. And green has Zodiac Horse, Zodiac Monkey, Zodiac Ox, Zodiac Rabbit, Zodiac Rooster, and Zodiac Tiger.
Yeah, and all of those are horsemanship, or not horsemanship, all of those are land walking of some kind, except for the dragon, which was special, obviously. So that it would kind of like made sense for these creatures, and I'm just a fan of cycles anyways, you know, because it just sort of adds something neat to a set when there's cycles to discover there, and this seemed like the place to have it make the most sense. And then we tied them all together by putting this sort of famous poem as their flavor text as you go through those cards. I forget what the order is. You have to actually get them in order to understand it, but There it is.
Is there an, I mean, there must be an order to the Zodiac, I assume, right? I assume they're in Zodiac order?
Yeah, that's right. But since it goes in a circle, it's hard to tell, like, where's the beginning and end, because, like, you know, it just loops around and around. I think it's the one after the dragon is the first one. So if you look at a, if you were to actually look at a real Chinese Zodiac, whatever one starts after the dragon, and forgive me that I don't remember that off the top of my head, is the beginning.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's funny because there are definitely some things, like, for example, Creature Dog, I think, shows up for the first time on Zodiac Dog in Portal Three Kingdoms. And then for years it was Hound, but we finally went back to Dog. But, like, here's Creature Dog sitting in a magic set from 99, so.
Yeah. Actually, Zodiac Snake is the first one.
Zodiac Snake, okay, in black.
Zodiac Snake. So if you want to, like, read the whole poem, start with Snake, go through the order of the Zodiac animals, and you can read the whole poem.
Yeah, behind them is, you can see a little seal behind them. So if you look, it actually shows the order that they go in.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In the art, so.
Yeah. But like, even like when you look at like, I'm looking at a card, the Burning of Xinye. And that was an incident in the book. I forget what it was, but like a town or a city was destroyed. And we use that, you know, as the name. You know, for the card that, like,
can we say what it does? I just want to say what it does before as we're talking about
so
it.
Yeah, so I forget what the, I think this is the,
it's
kind of the equivalent of a Jokelhopsy sort of effect. I forget what it is exactly. I don't know if there's an exact translation of normal magic.
Let me just read it so that the audience knows what it is. Ahead. So it's 4 red, so 6 mana total, sorcery. You destroy 4 of your lands, and your opponent destroys 4 of his or her lands, then burning of Xinye deals 4 damage to each creature. So yeah, it's kind of like
Jokelhopsy, earthquakey, kind
of wildfire, right? Is wildfire the card?
Oh, was that what it was back one?
I think maybe. It's wildfire, but yeah. But it represented sort of a moment in the story, right? That's sort of cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's funny that there's a lot of things that we did later in Magic that have become very staples of how we do Magic that you see, like, very early things being done here in Portal Three Kingdom. So you are a pioneer, Henry.
The proto versions of them.
So I also think you had the first chicken, so.
Oh, okay, nice. You know, I'm so proud of this set, and it was a fun set to work on, and it was a... just from a design point of view, it was fun to do. But it was a lot of research for the set to be able to do it and to do it justice, because I didn't want to, not embarrass myself, but I didn't want to embarrass Wizards or our company or make, you know, something that was not something that we'd be proud of. And we were very sensitive to making sure that, like, this is it's an important bit of text, and it's important history to people in Asia, and I didn't want it to be something that people would look at and scorn or feel like it wasn't done with care. And so, like, I read the actual translated book, and it's a big book. I forget the something like 1500 pages, something like that, the actual translation, the actual book. And then there's also a really good series of graphic novels. It's like a 10 series graphic novel that I read to sort of get a feeling for it too, as well as watching. There was a few miniseries that had English subtitles that have been done for Three Kingdoms. I'm sure probably more of it's been done by now.
Yeah, but you did a lot of research, right? You did a lot of sort of, you know, make sure you really understood the story and.
Yep.
So what is your favorite card in the set?
Oh.
What's your favorite of your babies?
I love the way the artwork looks for a few cards. It's more from the art than from, like, a particular card per se, because the cards are like portal cards, and it's like, okay, yeah, portal cards. But for me, it's more of like marrying the sort of the art and the flavor of what it does. I love Guan Yu and the artwork for Guan Yu, Sainted Warrior. You guys should look it up. It's some of the awesome art. The other art that was really great was for Liu Bei, who's the other sort of leader of the Shu Kingdom. And what's the third guy? Oh yeah, Chang Fei. Where is Chang Fei? Let me see. Where is he?
What color is he?
Oh, it might be with it. He's white. It might be Chang with an X, not with a... there he is, with a Z. Sorry, Chang Fei. And how that fits that their flavor.
Yeah, it's definitely for... One of the things that's interesting, like one of the things I've been trying to do with this podcast series is just make people aware of things from Magic's past, and Portal 3 Kingdoms is really a weird kind of product, just lost to time in some ways. I mean, it's obviously people play with individual cards. I mean, it's still people are aware of it, but it definitely is this weird. I don't know. Like the fact that one person worked. There's not that many sets that one person worked on.
You have your unbalanced your unglued sets, right?
Well, I did unglue. I mean, the other thing is Urza's. When you were doing this set, I think I was doing Urza's Legacy, which is a set I did by myself. We just didn't have enough people, so I'm like, oh sure, I'll just do a small set by myself. It's very, very funny. I just looking at it now that R&D has so many people that, like, you know, back in the days, like, we have all these projects. You're the one person to work on this project. We don't do that much anymore.
Yeah.
So what is something, we have a little bit of time left. What is something that people might not be aware of, like Portal 3 Kingdoms? Is there any sort of subtle nuance thing that you did that, like, you might not be, if you look through, you know, the set, you might not realize it's at first glance, but here's some cool thing. Like, what are some cool Easter eggs sitting in the set?
Oh, wow. Interesting. Cool Easter eggs. People might not know that the Way Kingdom is the one that actually wins in the end. Mm-hmm. Like, the victors are black. Like, I don't know how many Magic sets we've done that before where the actual victors in the of the contests are represented by black. I like I said before, the sort of the poem on the Zodiac cards is famous, and it's from the book. What other Easter eggs? As I'm looking, I'm trying to, it's just like all the history that's there and all the sort of the real history that exists in China. Like, you can go to these places, you know, like with the Red Cliffs. There's a famous Battle of Red Cliffs, and you can go there. And even now, it's like it's a place that exists and it's real. And people get not emotional exactly, but they feel like a certain reverence when they actually go to these places and experience it.
So have you been to China?
I have been to China, and I've been to some of the actual places where the story took place. I've been to the Red Cliffs. It's I forget what river it was on.
So when this set came out, did you interact with anybody? Like, did you go anywhere when the set came out to actually see people play with it when it first happened?
Yeah, I think there were some events that we had in Asia at the time that I went to. I think I went to the, like, Korean national championships at the time, and maybe it was another pro tour, some other events that we had in China where we were sort of showing off the set and sending it to people and getting people's feedback. And I did solicit some feedback from our Asian distributors and people that were in the know of Magic at the time to sort of get feedback to make sure that we weren't doing anything too terrible. And like I said, and our art director gave some feedback as too, to make sure that things were okay.
Yeah, like I was saying, we do a lot more now with sort of dealing with experts and stuff. And this is very early in Magic's life. So it's a proto of things to come.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, anyway, I will say that one of the things that's very fun to me is I've back in the day, we used to go around and demo the different portals. And that one of the things that was really illuminating to me is you would think when you take away almost everything that you think, like, you're just boiling it down to creatures and sorceries and lands, that you feel like, oh, maybe the game doesn't hold together, but it really, really does. Like, it's amazing how just the core of the game, how fun it is, even with a lot of the trappings taken away.
Oh, for sure. And not only that, but even like the flavor of the colors can still come through pretty clearly. Especially like I think we did have pre-constructed decks too for the various kingdoms. I think we only had three pre-constructed decks. There was one for each kingdom, but they played very differently. Like, they played the way you would think like a white portal deck would feel. Lots of small creatures, you know, the things that like that buff up all your creatures, and white that's great, and the blue is depending on more on the horsemanship, and black is depending on more of like sorceries and destroying creatures to get through, etc. So yeah, you can still, even with just the basics, you can still have a pretty good color pie that actually feels real and is fun.
Well, anyway, Henry, I can see my desk here, so that means we all know what that means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. But I want to thank you, Henry, for being here.
Thank you, Mark. It's good talking to you again.
Yeah, it's fun. It is fun to go back and just talk about things that literally, like, you know, 1999. This has been a while since this set saw light of day.
It has. It has indeed.
But thank you. Thank you, Henry. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
And for all you, I will see all of you next time. Bye-bye.